Hello, listeners. A quick programming note before we begin. This episode contains brief discussions of violence and suicide. So if you're not up for that right now, maybe choose a different episode from our library. Also, Joe curses a bit more than usual. Just to let you know, in case you have kiddos around. With that out of the way, enjoy.
Gather round, children, and I will tell you a tale of brothers in song.
That was pretty good, Dan. I like it.
Oh, okay. Do you have an evil laugh you want to share? You seldom get the opportunity.
No, I don't think so.
Fine.
How are you?
I'm good. Are your kids like all jacked up and ready to go for Halloween?
They are. We watch like a ton of Christmas movies as we lead up to Christmas, and we do a couple Halloween movies, but they are, but I don't know what the technical term is. I think it's scaredy cats, so we don't go too crazy.
Yeah.
But we did watch Hocus Pocus 2, which is kind of fun. And they like the first one, so it was a good time to go down memory lane and revisit some of those characters. But yeah, they're totally jacked up, man. They're ready to go.
They've been planning the costumes just for weeks, and yeah.
Yeah, and like as a parent, you're in like a rock and a hard place because you're like, I want to be early because I don't want to have to like deal with the stress of it getting like delivered on time because like nobody goes to costume shops anymore.
Yeah.
But if you go too early, you run the risk of there being like a complete audible on like October 15th. And then you're just like, what the fuck, man? but I think three of the four have arrived. Where they are in my house, I have no idea. But they are here somewhere.
Okay. All right.
But once it comes in the house, it's kind of like, that's not my problem anymore because I told you to put them away.
Right.
So we'll see. Man. Yeah.
As some listeners may recall, my son is 15. He's still going trick or treating with the kids, or with his friends. I mean, you know, he's being Jake from State Farm this year. So nothing to elaborate, nothing we got to worry about.
That is the most Connecticut costume I ever heard of in my entire fucking life.
Yeah. But it's not like the old days where it's like you get the costume and he loves the costume, he wants to sleep in the costume, wear the costume after school.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that he's still, you know, having fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the most important thing for sure.
Absolutely. And we're going to have some fun on this episode. We picked what I think are some Halloween worthy songs to talk about. Some are disturbing, some are creepy, some are just downright weird. So,
mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and get into our discussion. We each picked three songs, and Joe, we're going to let you go first. What are we going to talk about first?
So, of course, this was my opportunity to put in a little more classical music into our rotation. So the obvious choice would have been Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor, which I'm sure many of our listeners have heard many times. And I was like, I'm not that basic. I'm not going to do that. And so I went with the Fugue in G minor. But here's where my classical music education comes in. Fugue in G minor, BWV 542. Now, Dan, did you know what BWV 542 meant, or no?
No, not at all.
So
please tell me.
Yeah, so with Bach and with Mozart, and there may be a couple of others, but with those two specifically, They wrote so much music that they had to come up with their own way of cataloging it. So BWV is, and how's your German, Dan? Bach, Werk, Verzeichnicht. So, and then 542. So there you go. So if you ever want to search for something and make sure you find the right one, that you know, you go by the BWV number and it's always right. So this fugue is just a barn burner, man. It just starts off and it rolls the whole way. And, you know, it's the counterpoint in it is brilliant. You get so many different tones depending on who's playing it with and on which organ, because they all have like different stops. So depending on which stops you pull, you get different tones out of the instrument. And the pedal work on this is just freaking incredible. And so when you get that main theme in the pedals, I guess it's towards the latter half of the piece, it really kind of, you can just see like a dark cathedral, like an organist rehearsing this, and there's rain, and it's raining here tonight as we're recording this, and you're just like, oh yeah, this is like totally creep people out, but it's kind of fun too and beautiful in its own way. So that's why I picked this one. Were you familiar with this one before we listened to it?
Oh no, not at all, but I would like to become familiar with it. We grew up Catholic, and we don't really go to church anymore. Sorry, Mom. but the one thing that has kind of stuck with me from attending church so much as a child is, you know, I don't know about you, but I love an ominous organ flourish. And I could actually see myself listening to this stuff pretty frequently. It's very cinematic. I could see this like accompanying some kind of like horror movie montage or something like that. So I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, it's a fun one. And if you want to listen to more of this, I think the recording I sent you is by an organist. His name is E. Power Biggs. And he is just, he's the best. He's just the best. And so he has lots of recordings of all types of organ music. So, and I'm sure there's plenty of Bach on there. So if you want to listen to it more, just find his album and you will be pleased.
Absolutely. Please send it to me. Yes. And that actually reminds me that I should mention that, like always on all of our special episodes, we're going to create a little playlist and put a link to the playlist in the show notes. So there will be all these songs and more.
So you won't even have to remember the BWV number, because we'll just do it for you.
Exactly.
We'll take care of it for you.
Exactly.
See? That's why I got my master's in music. Yeah. Dan, you're up next. So what was your choice?
So I chose a song by the Decemberists, who is a band that, you know, I keep mentioning that you should listen to. Their style is somewhat, I like to say, they're like Counting Crows if instead of being hung up on women all the time, they just like read obscure literature all the time. the song that we listened to is a song called Shankill Butchers. And I actually learned a little bit about this song because I've heard it a million times, but I never kind of dug deeply into what it's about or what it means. So the Shankill Butchers were a faction of the Ulster Volunteer Force in Ireland. And so they were like a paramilitary organization. And the Shankill Butchers were an offshoot of that. You know, the Ulsters, for people who don't know, are against the reunification of Ireland. And in the mid-70s, they carried out a series of grisly murders. And that's the basis of the song. The Butchers abducted seven random
Catholic citizens of Northern Ireland and killed them in the middle of the night by slashing their throats. And the song is, I guess it's like, it's a kind of a folky song, and it's in a minor key.
Mm-hmm.
And it has all these like details that add to, you know, the creepy, like threatening nature of the song. The guitar solo is done on like a dobro or some other kind of like steel bodied guitar, so it's got this weird quality to it, and you hear like chains rattling in the background.
I think I also heard some accordion in this one as well.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's got cool harmonies and stuff, and mm-hmm. And I was really curious to know what you thought of the song as well.
Yeah, I like this one, and for all the reasons that you listed, it definitely had an eerie quality. And I think what I appreciated about it the most is like that very much like that old like English Irish like folk storytelling aspect of it. I thought that was really cool and fun. I mean, as fun as you can be about grisly murders. but I thought it was really well done, you've been telling me this for a while. Oh, you should get into the Decemberists. So this was a good entry, and I'm sure that this is not the only facet of the music that they make, but it definitely got me intrigued, because I was like, oh, well, if they can do this with this type of storytelling and with the types of sounds that they create, like, I'm curious of what other things they might do. So I will definitely like to listen to them more. But yeah, and the immediate thought the first time I listened to it, and I don't know if you or any of our listeners are fans, but it definitely had like a Peaky Blinders type of feel to it, which is a show. It's like early 1900s set in Birmingham, England. And they have a lot of music that would be similar to this that's incorporated into the show. So I appreciate that as well. That was my way of connecting with it. So it was good. I liked it.
Cool. Cool. All right. What's next from you, Joe?
So the next one for me is something I was like shocked when you're like, I've never really listened to this song closely or listened to it at all. But it's the Don Henley song New York Minute. And Don Henley of Eagles fame, but went and did his own thing as a solo artist. I swear to you, for the 10 years I lived in New York, there was many a night where you'd be walking out of a restaurant on a rainy Thursday night like it is tonight, and you'd see like steam coming up from the manhole covers. Mm-hmm. And like you're trying to see a taxi, but you can't see anything because there's so much like fog and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is like totally what the New York Minute is all about. And so it definitely has that like eerie feeling to it, but it's also just like a really great song. And the songwriting is, I found it really quite compelling, and it really tells a story. And, you know, it's about how even when things aren't going your way in life, like they can change pretty quickly. And I think that we should all remember that, because it's never as bad as you think it is, and it's never as good as you think it is. And things happen quickly. So this is like, it's a little bit of a long song, but I kind of appreciate all the elements that are woven into it. What were your impressions of it?
Yeah, so I have heard this song before, and I don't know why I didn't catch, you know, all the things that you were just mentioning. But the opening chords are a little bit foreboding and unsettling. Mm-hmm. And this was also really the first time that I paid attention to the lyrics, and there's way more murder than I remember as well. And it is a great, you know, storytelling song, like you said. You know, I guess my only complaint about it is that I wish the string section was a real string section instead of a synth string section. But I guess 1989 is probably the last year that was acceptable. Took a little detour and looked at the other tracks that are on that Don Henley album, and I'm like, oh yeah, these are good songs that I kind of remember. I was very surprised by this. I was like, what the heck are you talking about when you gave it to me on the list? But now I'm like, okay, now I understand.
Sure. Sounds good. Yeah, that was, I love 80s music, and I thought this was a good one to spend a couple minutes listening to again. So next one is your choice, my friend. What do you got?
So, you know, I had to pick at least one metal song. It is Halloween, after all.
Of course.
So I picked a song called Eight of Swords by the band Huntress. And, you know, it wouldn't be a Halloween song list without a song about the occult. So that's what we've got here. And it starts the way every good metal song should, with a 10-second blood-curdling scream. Jill Janis was the vocalist for that band. And fun fact, she grew up singing opera.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, absolutely. Eight of Swords, the title of the song, refers to a tarot card called the Eight of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try to explain it the best I can, because I'm not into tarot. Like, I think the imagery is kind of fun and stuff, but I'm certainly no expert. So if there are any tarot devotees listening to this, please don't get mad at me as I try to explain this. And sure. I welcome your critique as well. But the Eight of Swords card is kind of the damned if you do, damned if you don't card.
Okay.
And the image of the card, I'm going to send this to you in real time here. But generally, the card depicts a woman that's tied and has a blindfold and is surrounded by eight swords stuck in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like you're imprisoned by your own limiting beliefs, because all you have to do is, you know, is look around and realize that you can escape. But if you leave the blindfold on, then you're going to run into these swords and get cut. So it's like kind of about defeating your own, you know, your own mind that limits what you're capable of. And kind of the interesting and sad part about this is that Jill Janis suffered from bipolar disorder, and she actually committed suicide in 2018. When you learn that and you listen to the lyrics of the song, it's kind of like, oh, okay, this kind of all makes sense. Sure. In a really sad and dark way, I guess. But what were your impressions of this?
So, without like a lot of context, when I like jump into metal, they all sort of sound the same. I know that they're different, and like you have to listen to them a couple times to like get those, like to pick apart those elements and pull them out to really hear how they're different. But with this one, it was pretty clear the lead singer's a woman, which was,
yeah.
I mean, obviously should have gotten that from the name of the group, but, you know, I really appreciated what she brought to the table, and I thought she was a great you know, a great lead metal singer and probably could have done a lot of different things with the way that, you know, if she had some classical training and really was learned how to use her voice in a powerful way, which I think this is a great example of that. Yeah, and I didn't really dig into the research of the meaning of the song. I read the lyrics and I was like, oh, that's an interesting metaphor, which makes sense. But I didn't realize it was all sort of tied together in that way. But yeah, I did. I mean, again, I'm not going to go listen to metal like every day.
Right.
Or sing it on my car ride to work. But right. I think this is like a really good example of that style of music and all the different complexity and other elements that it brings to the table. So I appreciate it for what it was, which is, you know, it's a good metal song. I don't know if I'll be listening to it like over and over again, but that was a good choice by you.
Yeah. Well, I thought you would like this one more than some other stuff, because even though this, you know, this is from their debut album in 2012,
mm-hmm.
they have a very, to me, like 80s metal style. Like they're more like, you know, Metallica, Iron Maiden,
sure.
Megadeth sort of style,
yeah, yeah.
more so
I
than
totally
a contemporary
yeah.
metal style. So mm-hmm. I thought you would appreciate that. So what do you got up for us next, Joe?
So up next, we have the, I guess it's technically the penultimate, but let's be honest, it's the final scene of mm-hmm. Mozart's 1780 opera Don Giovanni, Accennar teco min vis vitasti. And let's go back to a trope that I liked when we did our opera episode with Matthew. Here's your back of the napkin summary of this thing. Scumbag fuckboy gets taken to hell. So
pretty much, yeah.
I almost made you spit out your drink with that.
Yeah.
So Don Giovanni is the Don Juan story that we're all sort of familiar with, and this guy is just a complete fucking asshole for the whole opera.
Right.
And basically at the end, somebody he murdered in the first act comes back and takes him to hell. As he deserves, because again, i.e. see above scumbag fuckboy. There we go.
Yeah. Exactly.
But so this one is it's kind of, and like, oh my, let me just put in the obligatory, this was written like over 200 years ago, the guy.
Okay.
So like, let's take it with a grain of salt. But what's kind of fun about this, depending on the production, is basically like a devil-like character comes out and calls this guy out on all his bullshit, and then he's taken down into hell. And then I say it's like as is Mozart. There's this big climactic moment, and then everybody comes out and be like, yay, we're all good now, the bad guy's gone, and then the opera ends.
Sweet.
But it's usually done by, you know, a pretty substantial bass voice. And if you get the right singer, it can kind of be pretty frightening. And that's why I chose this particular scene. There's, there are countless scary / mad scenes that you could have picked for this sort of type of episode when we're thinking about scary, spooky, scary stuff. So I'll leave it at that. Dan, what were your impressions of this thing?
I definitely appreciated having the visuals for this one, mm-hmm. because you sent me a link to a YouTube video. So like, and this particular production, the production values were great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though for the sake of the audience anyway, the makeup doesn't have to be perfect, like the set doesn't have to be perfect because they're, you know, watching it at a distance.
Sure, sure.
But it is perfect. Mm-hmm. So I loved the makeup for the Harbinger of Doom, shall we say. And you know, the music was great. There's fire. There's a trapdoor. Yeah. There's a trapdoor in the stage where Don Giovanni gets sucked into hell. And you know, and the music was great too. Like, it just has this melodramatic like profundity to it that is cool. And I mean, that's what you get when you go to an opera, right?
Yeah,
which is perfect with Halloween, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And depending on the production that you would see of this, like, some of it's like really over the top, and that's fine. And some and then I think, like, as like a sort of contrast to that, I know there are other productions where it's like so minimalist, you're just like, what is even going on here? But it kind of doesn't matter because everybody has seen this opera, or many of the people in the audience have seen the opera before. They know the story. So, like, they don't need it, like, spelled out to them with fire and brimstone, so to speak. But I'm kind of more of a traditionalist, and, you know, it's always fun to see the fire on stage.
Yeah, well, I thought it was perfect. Like, even though it is melodrama, it doesn't feel, you know, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the lighting was perfect, and you know, and the music's great because it's Mozart. And I would go see a production of that just for
the ending,
just for that. I mean, I'm sure the rest of the opera is great too, but I would definitely do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right, my friend. What is our final selection for this evening?
Well, final selection, and then a little surprise for Joe.
Okay.
We are going to be next talking about the song Eyeball Kid by Tom Waits. And for this, I picked this because it's got kind of more of like a weird vibe to it.
Yeah.
As opposed to a scary vibe. Tom Waits, if you know anything about him, he kind of has an affinity for outcasts and like circus sideshow people are often featured in his songs, and that's what we've got here. But it's also kind of surreal because this circus sideshow person, the Eyeball Kid, is just a disembodied eyeball. It's, you know, the whole song is kind of a metaphor that pokes fun at the, you know, dysfunction of show business, because you have like this unscrupulous manager promoting a person who is popular because of the, like, the shock value of, you know, what they look like. And he's making, you know, the manager's making the Eyeball Kid all kinds of outlandish promises, like booking him in Carnegie Hall and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the song itself has a lot of wacky sounding percussion and weird samples that come in and out, including a bell being rung by a hammer kind of that's like pops up randomly. Tom Waits kind of either writes songs that are these just heartbreaking, sincere ballads, or like totally bizarre.
Yeah.
And this is on the totally bizarre end, and Tom Waits being weird in the best way. Mm-hmm. I know you probably don't have too much familiarity with Tom Waits, and not that I'd necessarily pick this as an introduction, but here we are. What'd you think?
So I appreciated the gore. I thought that was like fitting for this episode. But I don't know. I know a little bit about Tom Waits. I've heard stuff of his, and I can't wrap my head around it. I'm just not a fan. I don't know what else to say. Like, the sounds are just, like, not pleasant. And, like, I understand there's, like, a place for that in the world. And he's trying to do a thing and convey a message. Mm-hmm. But I can't connect with it on a level that is like, oh, I can appreciate this or that. I tried hard with this one, but I couldn't get there. Maybe there's other Tom Waits that I could get there with, but
I'm telling you, I could send you some Tom Waits ballads that'll have you like locking yourself in the bathroom and crying. So but yeah, I mean, you know, it's supposed to be unsettling, especially in this case, I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, maybe he's somebody we need to think a little bit more about. If you have other ideas about how you would like to convert me,
yeah, sure.
throw them out.
I certainly will. I certainly will. Well, the time has come in the show where I've got a little surprise for Joe. And we're going to do, I guess, our first live reaction.
All right.
Well, it won't be live for the viewer as the listeners are listening to it.
So if it goes to complete shit, we'll just cut it out.
Yeah. If you're like, after you listen to this, if you're like, Dan, it's over, the show's over, I wouldn't blame you. But what we are going to be listening to a song called To the Hellfire.
Mm-hmm.
By another metal band. They're called Lorna Shore. And this song has been the YouTube reaction fodder du jour.
Okay.
For the past few months.
All right, let's hop on.
There's
that
like
train. Let's
tons of reaction videos about this. So I thought it would be fun to do our own.
Mm-hmm.
So through podcast magic, we will be back in a second as Joe and I listen to this song together, and then we'll come back and talk about it if we're still on speaking terms.
Yeah. 50-50. We'll see.
All right. Here we go.
So that was a lot.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you're not kidding.
I feel like I needed like a palate cleanser, but that's all right. So the like if a soul that was dying could make a sound, that would be the sound.
Yeah, it's like wild. Now, of course, on the recorded version,
mm-hmm.
you know, Will Ramos, he's the vocalist. Like, mm-hmm. there's obviously like lots of overdubbed,
of course,
vocals.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah.
you can hear like high screams and low screams and mid screams mm-hmm. all at the same time. The truth is, I don't really like the music to this song very much
mm-hmm.
because there's all these blast beats,
which
is just like straight ahead 30-second notes
mm-hmm.
on everything,
mm-hmm.
and sounds weird coming from a metal fan, but I don't actually really care for that.
Yeah,
because that's not any like
you're just playing fast. You're not really doing anything else.
Yeah, you're not like creating any kind of like rhythmic interest, really.
Mm.
But there is like this underlying melody that gets overwhelmed by that, but it's kind of like a cool eerie melody.
Mm-hmm.
Then with about a minute and a half, there is kind of like this beautiful guitar solo.
Yeah.
And then the grand finale, that breakdown.
Yeah.
How would you describe that?
Well, I have to say, I think YouTube user enter name here summed it up perfectly. And he said, I called my doctor because my balls have been making these strange sounds. He said, describe what they sound like to me. So I played him the last 30 seconds of this song. He recommended I go to the ER.
That is a good... That's a pretty apt description. So, like, even though I don't like the music of the song that much, it's like, you know, you listen to different music for different reasons. And I think, like, Will Ramos is just, like, a killer metal vocalist because of the variety of different sounds he can make. He's, like, this tiny, and he's, like, he's this tiny little effeminate looking man. And he can do all that stuff live too, which is pretty impressive. And I don't really know how he does it. But the first time I heard that, I was just like, laughing because I was like, what is this, man? Like this. I was like, I'm like, this is incredible, but like, what is this? But it will be on the playlist for anyone who cares to listen to it. It's a 6 minute long song, which is kind of on the longer side. But if you just listen, all you really need is like the last 90 seconds.
Sure. Or like the first 90 seconds and then skip ahead if you want. And you'll get the idea.
You kind of get the idea because it's just it. Because not only are you contending with the kind of harshness and unsettling nature of listening to the screaming, but this song is bereft of any kind of like rhythmic or melodic center at all.
Yeah, I did note there were several time signature changes, but you could feel and melodically, I don't even know. Like there's some harmonics in there somewhere, but it's hard to really pinpoint the center.
Right. Well, like that first like 10, 15 seconds of intro where it's just the guitar playing that melody, which is kind of, you know, beautiful in its own way. That seems like it's just repeated underneath all the rest of it throughout the song. But it's obviously overshadowed by everything else.
Well, that was a fun little game.
Yeah. we might do some more live reactions in the future, perhaps. I promise they won't be as difficult as this one. But thank you for playing along with me. I don't know about you, but I had fun on our little Halloween special.
Absolutely, man. Halloween's a great holiday, and this is a good way to celebrate it by picking some kind of music that we don't listen to all the time, but has its redeeming qualities and definitely puts you in the Halloween spirit. So good job by you with this idea, and I hope our listeners enjoyed it.
We definitely hope you enjoyed it, and you know, for our next episode, we kind of came to a consensus about what we're going to do, as opposed to having one of us pick, because we were a little bit we were kind of throwing some ideas around and kind of had to come together to think of something good to give you folks. So next time we will be talking about the Billie Holiday classic Lady Sings the Blues. Happy Halloween, everyone. Eat lots of candy. We'll see you next time.
Trick or treat.
Brothers in Song is written and produced by Joseph Collin and Daniel Collin, and edited by Daniel Collin. To keep up with the latest news, follow us on Instagram at Brothers in Song. Until next time, listen to some new music. You just may surprise yourself.